You got to know where this guy at all times. There he is again.
How about three in a row?
Going deep. That was cold blooded.
Another three.
No!
All right, here we go. Wednesday, July 20th. Got a special mailbag episode of High Volume Shooter here where got quite a few patrons leaving me voice messages, interaction, a couple written out questions here. And so I think this will fill the time here. We got quite a few of these. And like I had said previously, I'll probably rely on some more of these mailbag episodes throughout the dry times of the off season here. And so let's start it off with the voice message from MacGuber.
Oh, yeah, Uncle Alk, talk to me about the Warriors, yeah.
Got a couple of those, couple of clowns, man, but it's all in fun. I also got something from the man himself, 50 Cent.
I don't give a fuck, I don't play that shit, and I'm finna bust a cap with a nigga.
All right, you two clowns. I appreciate your participation. Let's start off with the real first mailbag question from Gavin.
How you doing, Alk? I would like to ask you about Russell Westbrook. I mean, you know, over this past week, you know, with the stuff with his agent and his agent thinking it'd be best for him to stay in L.A., but L.A., Russ, you know, thinking otherwise, and then reported today by The Athletic that he doesn't really believe in Darvin Ham's ideas of, you know, him being a defensive first guard, more of a role player, and that Russ doesn't see that for him. And with all that coming out and how messy is getting with him in L.A., is this the end of not only his time in L.A., but is this the end of his career? Like, what is the next step? Like, say he gets traded from L.A., what is the next step? Does a team actually want him, you know, on any type of team? Like, no matter if they're rebuilding or trying to win now, like, would you want him on your team?
You know, I was listening to Chris Herring on the Low Pod this week. And, you know, he does it's one of those stat groups. He works for one of those Spectrum stats or whatever it is. And he's reading off all these defensive stats from Russell Westbrook. He finished in the bottom of like every major statistical category defensively. And some of this stuff is really advanced, but it was like facing players driving against him, right? He was 60 out of 70, right? Out of the guys that qualified. Defending a direct line drive, 65th out of 70. Opponents' expected field goal percentage, he finished 90th out of 92. Just ridiculously bad defensive stats from Russell Westbrook. The dude is just super selfish. There is no other way to put it. The guy is a completely selfish basketball player. I don't, you know, I'm not going to judge. He seems like a good family man with his kids and his wife and all that. But just as a teammate and as a basketball player, there's no other real way to put it other than he's not about winning. He's not about winning. And it's funny because how many times have you heard him say that, right? But there's no way you should have that type of motor and those physical gifts and be that bad defensively. I was in on the ground level with the Russ Westbrook hate, man, because you go look at my first YouTube video ever. We're talking like six years ago or something, and it was called Russell Westbrook, The Numbers Lie. But to answer your question, Gavin, I think it's gonna end up like Iverson, where remember when Iverson, he went to Detroit, I think he was in Memphis, and then he just fizzled out. He didn't actually retire like until like 5 years later. He's like, all right, I'm retired. We're like, oh, word, AI? Like, you kind of haven't played in like 3 years. And I think it's going to go out like that. You know, I heard rumblings that the Spurs would take him. It's going to take a team that's tanking, that are like, hey, we'll eat his contract for draft capital. But I don't know how much spotlight is going to be on Russ in these final years here because he's not willing to adjust who he is. And that's, I want to shout out Melo, Dwight, for having the self-awareness at a certain point to be like, all right, I'm a role player. I love the game enough. I still want to play. Let me adjust my style of play. This dude's selfish. And it's just funny. It's funny to watch it take this long for so many people to realize. Like, how did LeBron not know this before they brought him in? It's like you got to get up close and personal to figure it out. Again, those defensive stats you can hear on the latest low pod from Chris Herring there. Because you know me, I'm not a stats or numbers guy, but some of the stuff is just, it is what it is. It's like, damn, when you're last in all this shit, bro, and then you're an alpha athlete, you're an A-level athlete, like, come on, man. Come on, yeah. So I think it's going to end ugly and probably off in some on some obscure team that's trying to tank. Let's go to Kyle here.
Yoel, thanks so much for all you do. I think Wiseman's a perfect fit with where we're at right now as a team. You know, we really just need a big body who can set good screens, you know, be a defensive presence, and doesn't need to be a focal point of the offense and do spot minutes with, you know, between him and Looney and running some small ball. You know, I think he's in a perfect opportunity to grow without too much weight on his shoulders in terms of roles and responsibilities and get to just get the little things done right, you know, with a veteran core that's, you know, championship pedigree. And so, yeah, I'm hopeful in that respect that, you know, if he was on a young team, you know, it's like, sure, you get more playing time, potentially more development in particular ways. But as far as the little details, you know, learning, winning basketball and in a system that's proven with not a ton of weight on his shoulders, that I think given where he's at developmentally will be a nice synergy. So I'm excited about that. We'll see how it goes.
Appreciate the take, Kyle. Now, you said something. Does Wiseman set good screens? Does he? Nah, man, it's so hard to tell in summer league with the lack of chemistry and those impatient ball handlers, right? But I was reading a comment on one of my YouTube videos on Wiseman, and someone had said we should trade him to a team like the Jazz, who knows how to develop a big man. And it kind of just got me to thinking, historically, this organization, this franchise, they've never developed a big man. I mean, we all know Wilt played for them. We've had some big men, but they never developed one, as far as I know, right? And then it's like our system, you know, doesn't really ask a ton of the center position. And it just got me to thinking, like, how much different would Wiseman look on a team that was kind of letting him play more traditionally and maybe had more of a history of developing a big man, right? But at the same time, how many teams use bigs traditionally in today's game? So, you know, you're right, though. On paper, right, not too much is going to be asked of him. I would say, listen, the hands, I don't know how you go about it. I brought up those strobe goggles that Steph uses that became kind of famous, the nerve, taxing your nervous system and reflexes, right? Because reflexes are part of the hands. Whether it's strengthening the hands, the reflexes, just getting softer hands, learning to catch the ball with your fingers and not your palms. But that would be like my priority in these few months here before training camp is his hands and his core and just some of the technique of being physical rather than like, you know, shooting and dribbling and like the loud skills of basketball. I think if he could come back with improved hands and reflexes, that would unlock a lot of the potential that we all see.
Hey, Alec. It's Shay here. Longtime fan. Love all the work that you do. Can't get enough of your content. Keep killing it, man. So I just had a question about what you thought about our second unit, kind of. I think our first unit and that kind of mid-first corner unit where Poole comes in is really, really solid, obviously. But I'm kind of concerned with how the second unit is going to fit together, particularly like Kuminga and Wiseman, who are both kind of rim attacking players being on the floor at the same time. It kind of feels like there's going to be a lack of spacing. You know, DiVincenzo isn't that good of a shooter. Poole's a shooter, but Wise is an iffy shooter. Kuminga is an iffy shooter. And I don't really know how Moody's going to fit into that lineup either. So I was just curious what you thought our main second unit lineup was going to be and how you thought that next season's second unit is going to turn out. Thanks so much. I'll keep doing you. Appreciate you.
Appreciate the question, Shay. You know, one of my main kind of bullet points with Wiseman over these summer league games was how I believe he should play outside in, as opposite as that sounds for a 7-footer, right? I'd have Wiseman play on the perimeter, and in turn, it wouldn't force Kuminga, but it would allow Kuminga to play in the paint because we've seen how comfortable he is at the elbows and just how physical and gifted he is around the basket. But like you said, like they're both kind of iffy shooters right now. I think Wiseman is good enough from three that you have to guard him, right? And then because Kuminga cuts so well and you can't really give him a runway to the basket, you kind of have to be out in front of him. You can't give him two steps in a dribble to come downhill at you. That's not going to work out for you, right? So I'd like to see the second unit play five out. You let Poole, DiVincenzo drive and kick, kind of like you watch Dallas play or even the Celtics at times. You play five out and it's just a drive and kick game, and that's how you put pressure on the defense and just keep it that simple. Now, Kerr, you know, traditionally or historically, I should say, he doesn't run out hockey subs. He doesn't have usually like a first and a second unit. He likes to mix and match and blend. So you assume there will be a vet out there as well for some spacing and stuff like that. But yeah, man, I'd say have Wiseman in the corner at the top of the key and just play a simple drive and kick game in space, because Poole, we know he can get into the paint. DiVincenzo is a better shooter than I think advertised, and you let those two create. Hell, even if it's Kuminga, Kuminga can get downhill and then kick if he's willing to. So that's how I'd like to see them play, but I don't know if there's necessarily going to be a quote second unit with all these young guys. I think Kerr is going to try to mix and match as much as he can.
Hey, Al Kitsabi, aka Abahi, on the Discord. I've been a patron since about 2017, so I want to say keep up the good work. It's been awesome following you all these years, seeing you pick up subscribers. So again, thanks. My question is, you've always talked about Dre being one of the best competitors in the league, and I'm sure there's a lot of players like him that, you know, you could kind of compile into a top five competitors and winners of the league that maybe aren't the most skilled or talented, but when they're on the floor, you know, they make winning plays and give you a good shot of winning. And ultimately, those are the players you want to surround your top talent with on a championship team. So I was wondering if you could give us your top five competitors in the NBA. Thanks.
That's a good one, Abby. That's a good one, man. I'm going to give you names that are kind of known right now. I think there are more obscure guys, like honorable mentions. Let's give some honorable mentions. Vanderbilt, who is now a Utah Jazz, right? The power forward who was with the Wolves. George Niang is a guy like that. There are some guys where if you're only in the weeds, like if you're watching, you know, the Hornets every night, there might be, you know, like the Martin twins. I like their competitive juice, okay? But guys that we see on Front Street and play a bigger role for their teams, you go Draymond, Marcus Smart, Pat Beverly. Here's a name you may not expect. I like Ricky Rubio as a competitor. He just does a lot of little things, man, and he's kind of a dog. And then I'll finish off with Jimmy Butler. So Draymond, Smart, Bev, Rubio, Jimmy Butler would probably be my top five of the prominent players. Again, there's guys that I think are just hidden. Here's another name for you from Minnesota, the McLaughlin, right? Yeah, I love his competitive spirit. So there are some lesser known guys that deserve some recognition. But when you look at that archetype, they're usually undersized or relatively smaller guys for their position, right? And they're not like supernaturally talented. And a lot of the time they had to really fight to make it, right? Which puts that chip on their shoulder and kind of some of that dog in them. That's part of the ingredients to being an ultra competitor. But at the same time, you know, some of this, it's nature versus nurture. Some of this is just you're wired that way. And my favorite example is, you ever seen kids playing soccer? Young kid. I'm not talking about 10-year-olds. I'm talking 5-year-olds, because soccer is that one sport where you can really like roll toddlers out there and they can just kind of kick the ball around, right? You watch a bunch of 5-year-olds play soccer. Even at that age, you can kind of see the competitors and the kids that go after the ball to different degrees, right? But then you have some of the kids that are just kind of standing there looking at the sky and shit like that, right? So some of this is innate, but also your nurture, your course to get to the league. How have you got there? You haven't had a bunch of talent. You can't just play too cool for school, right? And then have you been slighted? Are you smaller? So you've got to be extra physical. I think those are the ingredients that lead to these ultra competitors.
Hey, Al, big fan. Love the work that you're doing. I had a question on the KD trade. You know, all the rumors that Steph hasn't shut down the trade. My brother brought up the fact that, you know, do you think that they're just trying to raise the price on KD so other teams, you know, have to give up their whole, you know, decades worth of picks? Or do you think that they're really trying to just show off the rooks in summer league, like Kuminga and Wiseman, and, you know, maybe Moody if they want to throw him in like last second to, you know, secure the deal? I think Moody's the one they want to keep, possibly, if they do trade for KD. Or do you think that they're really just trying to get more experience for the rooks and just build for the future?
Why can't it be both? Why can't it be both? That's what I hear in my house with a house full of girls and women. Why can't it be both? I think it is all the above. I'm not going to lie to you. Watching the rooks in summer league, I said to myself, you know, as exciting as they are, as much potential as they have, you trade them all for KD if you get the opportunity. You trade Kuminga, Wiseman, and Moody. Now, I'm not saying that that's what it would be, and I'm not saying they would do. I'm just, like, statistically speaking, right, the odds of any of them ever being able to sniff KD's jock is super low. But at the same time, this is why it wouldn't happen, is we don't need them to be KD, right? They don't have to turn into some all-time player. That's not fair to put that on them. I understand that. But I guess what I realized is how little of their potential right now is actually a sure thing. And I know this is like an obvious thing. It's like, well, duh, they're young. It may or it may not happen. But right, like, and maybe outside of Moody. Moody, I think the odds are, that would be cool. You know how we have all these advanced stats? What if they had advanced percentages and stats of players hitting their potential? I don't know how you do that, right? But if you did that, if you put Moody in some sort of algorithm, probably like 70% chance that Moody becomes this solid player that we expect him to be. But Wiseman and Kuminga, you know, like, I don't want to be doom and gloom here, but there's still a good chance that they just are all right. They're just all right, right? They never really put it together, you know, past that. And, you know, like, maybe Wiseman just can't stay on the floor, foul trouble, injury. You look at Jaren Jackson Jr., right? Like, has all this potential. And then it's like, right? Well, maybe Kuminga has an attitude. I'm not trying to be doom and gloom, but these are real possibilities. Nothing. They haven't made it at all yet. They haven't really proven much other than that they could potentially be good. And, you know, everybody's been following the league for different amounts of time. I've been following it since like 92. So I've seen so many stories play out like that, where it's like, oh, you know, like, had a spark when you started, but now you just, you know what I'm saying? Like, the first 2 to 3 seasons of a guy with a really high ceiling, half the time, a lot of the time, that's the highest value they'll ever be at, right? I remember there was a time where, like, Mo Harkless was thought of as like this, like, intriguing big wing, right? Now he's Mo Harkless is just Mo Harkless. But anyway, weird example. But what I'm getting at here is I think that Steph realizes this as well. I'm sure he likes them and he likes their potential, but he also knows, again, it's not a given whatsoever. And so it makes sense for the core three to welcome back KD with open arms. The narrative has changed. Steph is now sitting at a different table than Kevin Durant. And if he can get a fifth, a sixth, shit. And he also knows KD is down too, right? Like, he can't catch up in ring counts with him by his side. They could go run off 2 more rings. Steph's still going to have 2 more rings. But, you know, it's fun to talk about. All of that said, I think the 2 biggest roadblocks to Durant coming back would be 1, Joe Tsai, and 2, Steve Kerr. We've all heard about how pissed off Tsai is, and rightfully so, in the Nets, and are they even going to play ball with trading him? Why in the world would they send him back to us, where he could come back and just win more rings, and just, like, why would they do that, right? So maybe we have the assets, but I just think that a dude that's this upset with Durant and how this has gone down, I think he would... out of spite, he wouldn't send him back to us just because it's too good of a situation for KD. And then the Kerr aspect of it is, does Kerr want to deal with Durant and his fickle mood swings and attitude when, you know, they've just proven they could win without him, obviously. And Kerr at this point, and I shouldn't even say at this point, like Kerr has earned the right to have a heavy hand on the personnel decision. Obviously, Lacob and Bob are the final say, but Kerr's got to have a big say at this stage in this dynasty, right? But we'll see, man. It looks like this KD scenario is going to stall out all summer. That's my bet.
Hey, Alec, long-time fan. I've been listening to you for a few years now and love every single breakdown and everything and all the podcasts and everything. Keep doing what you're doing. I had a question about pickup ball. I remember you used to do pickup ball tips a while back. I've been playing a lot of pickup ball lately, and I usually end up with guys that are new to the sport or they haven't played a whole lot of basketball. Any tips on how to utilize people like that in a competitive game or whatnot? Appreciate you taking the time to answer this. Thanks.
That's a good one, man. I don't know if this is how to pronounce this name. I'm going to call you G1 because that's what the tag here is on the voicemail. But I'm not even going to lie to you. I'm too old to mess around, man, because like I can't carry a pickup game no more. When I was in my 20s, like, I had enough arrogance and confidence where it's like I didn't really care who I was running with. Like, give me the ball. I'll keep us in it. Not at 40, right? Like, I kind of got to pick my squad. And so I'm like, no. No, no, they're like, hey, you got your, because usually we play fours where I was playing at. You got three, you got, oh, no. You look around, oh, no, I ain't running with y'all. but sometimes you don't have that choice, especially if you're like at a busy gym and it's just, you're trying to get on the court. You know, you got to treat them like the Warriors treat their bigs, right? Just set screens and rebound. Now, it kind of goes back to that best competitor question, right? Where a lot of the time, in even in pickup, the less skilled and talented players will play super hard to kind of make up for that. They understand, like, let me just play extra hard. And so if you find yourself playing with guys like that, one trick I like to use is, because people wouldn't think to do this, is put them on one of the better players. Let them use their energy. They're disruptive. They're kind of, you know, they move different, right? And some of these guys, you know, it will throw the other player out of rhythm, right? Because they do so much unorthodox stuff. And so, like I say, just encourage them to use their energy and effort. And then the other thing would be, don't give them the ball in bad spots. You know, don't give them the ball at a standstill 25 feet from the hoop and expect it to work out well, right? Try to, again, give them the loon treatment. And that's no diss to our guy, Loon Dog the GOAT, but I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying? You wouldn't give Loon the ball at half court. Right. Don't let them bring the ball up. Don't let them make bigger decisions. Try to just set them up and give them an idea of hang out at the dunker spot, the corners. And again, if they're a high energy, high effort guy, consider, I'm not saying the whole game, but be like, hey, switch on to this guy who's scoring and just try to throw their rhythm off. That'd be my advice. All right, let's go to Mike Z here.
Hey, Alchemy. Great rundown. And I really appreciated all the attention on Wiseman and the fifth game. This is Mike Z. So question, what do you see his upside as being this season? Like, what would you be satisfied with if he were to play out the season this year? And do you think that the Warriors can or should go after somebody like Whiteside or Cousins or Dwight Howard? Thanks.
It's a good question, man, because what would be really good? What are my expectations, as you guys kind of have read into, is probably lower, right? But I guess it's hard to put numbers on it. So I'd say, how about like 10 points, 5 boards and a block in around 20 minutes a game, I think would be like, okay, cool. He's contributing. And I like, how efficient is that, right? I really want to see him shoot 35% or better from three, because again, I still think his best route to becoming really good is as a legit stretch big. Now, as far as bringing in another big, you guys know I'm here for that, right? And I have become a Dwight fan later in his career. He's been a really good role player the last few stops, and I think it would be a really good role model for Wiseman in the sense of this. Let's say Tuesday night in January, and Kerr, for whatever reason, ices Wiseman in the first half of a game. He goes to Dwight early. Dwight's getting Wiseman minutes, and Dwight plays really well, right? He eats up all the first half minutes. Kerr goes back to Wiseman in the second half. How do you think he's going to try to play? I would hope he would be out there putting all his energy into defending and rebounding like Dwight does. So I think the way Dwight plays would be a good influence and an encouragement towards, hey, this is how we're going to reward minutes for the big. Not to say that Looney isn't that way either, but I think that Looney is kind of a Looney's a unique big, right? I don't think, you know, Wiseman probably doesn't look at himself and Looney like the same. But Dwight, I think that that's an interesting thing. As far as, you know, now let's contrast that hypothetical story with Boogie. Boogie eats those minutes, right? Now, second half, he comes in. Now, he's probably trying to model his game after Boogie, who is give me the ball, get out of the way type of game. So that's where, I'm a fan of Boogie, too. I think he's kind of got a bad rap, but his play style, we don't want being influenced to Wiseman, right? Now, they've brought in Jamichael Green, and I'm going to cut a little quick YouTube video on that here shortly as well. Really good move. It's a good move. But here's the thing. His season went downhill last year in Denver when they asked him to play the small ball five. So, yes, we've acquired Jamichael Green, and I think it's a great accusation. Again, I'll talk more about him in this kind of, but he's going to be more of an Otto Porter type of replacement. I still think that the roster needs another true big.
Hey, Alec, this is David. I got an interesting question. I feel like De'Aaron Fox is very underrated. Last year, I was saying that the Sixers would be much better off with De'Aaron Fox over James Harden. I think he's a better defender. At this point, I think he's better offensively. I think he's shown an ability to be clutch, and I think that he's a pretty underrated player. Where do you think he ends up next year? Do you think he's going to be traded? Do you think he's going to stay with the Kings? Like, what do you think is going to happen with De'Aaron Fox, and where do you see his career going from there?
I definitely think they're going to try to make it work in what they're putting together in Sacramento. Sabonis, Keegan Murray, I like what they've done. I'm a Davion Mitchell fan. The Malik Monk thing was interesting. Like Monk or DiVincenzo. I guess DiVincenzo was salty at the front office, so he wasn't coming back. You know, what's limiting about Fox and his value is he needs the ball. If you were to be trading for De'Aaron Fox, you're saying, all right, we're giving him the keys. And then when you look at him like that, then he is kind of on the backside of the list of those guys that you hand the keys to, right? Let's look at Fox's peers, Luka, Ja, Trey, Dame. I mean, Steph, I don't really put in this because he doesn't need the ball. That's what makes Steph so special, obviously, right? But you see what I'm saying. When you put him amongst the elite lead guards, what team says, okay, Let's bring in Fox. It's better than what we have. It's significantly better. Let's make that move. OKC, SGA. I probably like SGA a little better than Fox, to be honest with you. Cade in Detroit? Nah, probably ain't going to do that. How about Donovan Mitchell, wherever he ends up? Okay, maybe that's an argument. You know, you see what I'm saying? So I think he's going to stay in Sacramento. And if, you know, this is going to sound kind of crazy. What is he, like 24, 25 maybe? When he loses a little step in the next couple years, it may benefit his game because he's still going to be fast enough, but it's going to force him to play with better pace. And then in turn, I think that will help his perimeter shooting. We know he's gotten really good at the mid-range pull-up, right? But that three ball we know is going to truly unlock him because guys, you know, on most nights are still going under the screen, right? And so if he can learn to play with more pace or is forced to play with more pace, that's when I think we'll really figure out if he can shoot that three ball. All right, let's go to Morris.
Hey, what's up, Uncle Alec? It's Morris. Been a patron for about 1.5 years. I got two questions for you. My first is that if you were the Warriors GM, you know, knowing only what you know now and potentially what could be known as the offseason progresses, you know, like with, you know, preseason and training and all that, what moves would you make or what moves wouldn't you make? What would you delay on? So on and so forth. So obviously some big questions are what would you and wouldn't you do with the summer league guys and the offseason moves you'd make. And yeah, I'd love to see your rationale for that. And then the second question I have is when are you going to do more like collabs and stuff, man? Obviously, like, you can't just like do a collab. You know, the stars got to align and stuff, but I love it when you got someone to bounce ideas off of and like the reverse, them bouncing ideas off of you. Though, to be honest, you solo as well is just pretty good as well. Love the pod, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, those are my two questions. Hopefully they get your brain going. Peace.
I've kind of already covered that first question, right? Like I want Dwight in there. I think, you know, we talked about the possible chemistry issues and we know that I've said in the past, look, like, I think they overvalue fit and chemistry, but they've proven me wrong over and over again. We continue to have that advantage as a team and a franchise because they value that. I'll take the L on that. So if they don't want to bring in Dwight, you know, Whiteside or Boogie, like, you just, they don't want to bring in any of those three guys, I get it. I'm gonna go with them because they've hit so well with that stuff. But, you know, they got away last season without having that big. I think it would just be a mistake to think you could get away with it again. And I understand, oh, they don't want to impede on Wiseman, right, and all that. But we don't know what Wiseman can be yet in for an NBA season. You look at Looney, he just played 104 games. I just think they're asking for trouble when you look at a Western Conference that you would assume is going to be deeper and healthier, right? So, you know, there's not a lot of them out there. Gorgui Dieng is a guy, Greg Monroe, just another big body, man. Maybe it'll depend also if Andre's coming back, because that's a roster spot. If Andre retires, maybe that'll open the door for them to take a flyer on a big. Just don't let it be Mwagbi. Oh, God. I can't see Mwagbi and Wiseman on the same team. No, I can't do it. As far as the collabs, look, I plan on doing some more this coming season. I'm going to go live on YouTube and bring the podcast to YouTube and do some more collab stuff. You said it, when the stars align, the stars have to align. And that's kind of what it is, because to be honest with you, going back and forth with someone is easier, right? Because you don't have to generate all the thoughts. It is an easier thing. But my schedule, working around the breakdowns and my kids, the window is tight in normal working hours, right? So to ask somebody who, you know, like my guy James, shout out Stevie, I'm trying to get him on some of these moving forward, right? But to ask someone who has a 9-to-5 or a different job, to ask them for an hour of their time in the middle of the day or in the morning, or I only have a tight window, that's kind of what hampers it. But I agree, and I'm going to try to have some more collabs. I just did a live stream with my guy who does the Knicks After Dark podcast and some stuff over there. So I'm getting my feet wet. I'm looking forward to doing more collaborations moving forward.
Yo, what's up, Alec? This is Levi. Been following for a while. Hope all is well with you. But as far as with the pod went, or the last breakdown, you were talking about Wiseman's lack of physicality. He reminds me of some of the younger kids that have coached basketball or football, where it may be like their first season or so, and like some bigger kid or some more experienced kid comes and just absolutely pops them, and they really don't know how to respond. And I believe with Wiseman, because he's shown flashes of being pretty physical. It just, like you're saying, on like some of those where he's turning back to his left or just getting kind of chested up. I mean, it looks like he's going to have to just play a lot more, and it's kind of hard to say when he's been hurt and he's been missing games. But I think that's something that just more experience and more time, especially at practice against Looney and Draymond, them shoving his ass around will definitely help clear that up. The hands is definitely weird, though. Like, I don't know if there is an answer to that. Get that man on a grip trainer or something, because that man's got some Charmin ultra soft hands, it looks like sometimes. But yeah, hope all is well. Let me know what you think.
To me, I kind of think physicality is more of an innate thing. Now, if he gets stronger, that should give him more confidence to be physical. And one thing I'll give credit to Wiseman, you know, I think we all focus on the negatives, or I do, and too much maybe. He's competitive. At least he's competitive. You see him, like, he does get thrown around or pushed around, and you see him be like, nah. You can see in his mind, he's like, nah, fuck that. And he tries to compete back. And so that's a good sign. That's a good sign. Look, this is the last time I'm going to mention Dwight Howard, but, I mean, could you imagine him having to deal with him physically in practice every day? Not to mention seeing one of the elite shot blockers of this era every day, and how he does it, and just kind of modeling and being around that osmosis. But I think that physicality isn't always on both ends of the floor. And I know this because of myself. As a player, I'm a jump shooter. That's just my instincts. I'll pull up 30 feet and in. You know, I'm not a physical offensive player. If I feel a bump, I'm probably stepping back or I'm spinning off of it. I'm not usually trying to go through it unless it's like obvious that I've got, you know, like 40 pounds or 50 pounds on somebody. But that's not most of the time. but defensively and on the glass, I'm as physical as they come. I think that probably has to do with playing so much pickup ball without referees, where you don't really get rewarded for being a physical offensive player without refs, right? We just call the foul and then you have to check it back up and start again. That kind of encourages jump shooting, right? So if that ends up being Wiseman, because I do think he is a jump shooter by nature, right? If that's how it ends up, where he may never be a put you in the basket big, but if he can learn to be physical defensively and on the glass, I think that that's what matters most for him. All right, two more here. First, triple OG patron Glanzer.
All right, this is Glanzer again. I have a question. What free agent, if you could sign one that you think would put us over the top, even if maybe he's already been taken this year, what's the one guy you would have taken? Honestly, I'm a little upset we didn't get Danilo Gallinari. I think he would have filled the perfect role for us.
Well, for me, it'd be Juan T. Duh. You know, nah, Danilo, man, Danilo is, there are nights where you're like, my God, this dude is so good, right? But he's always chipped up. I'm not mad at that pick. Like, you know, he definitely could have tried to fill the Otto role, but he doesn't do nearly the dirty work that Otto Porter does, like on the glass and the 50-50 plays and all that. How about JaVale? How about JaVale, man? I know I'm stuck on the bigs in the center position in that backup spot, but JaVale, bringing JaVale back, I was kind of salty Dallas got him. Thought he would be a perfect big, but again, impeding Wiseman, and then, you know, that's why they don't want to do it. So I'll give you another name. This one, maybe a little more obvious. How about John Wall? How about John Wall? Now, again, maybe he's one of those locker room guys that they don't want to touch, but at the vet minimum, like if they were to have gotten him for how the Clippers got him, you know, off a buyout, and then you could run pick and roll, and he can push the ball with Kuminga and Wiseman in that second unit, man, that would have been super intriguing.
Hey, Elk. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for the content. I was just curious, what would you think about Patrick Beverley joining the team? I think him and Draymond would be just hilarious together. We would just have two degenerates on our team, and it would be great content. Let me know what you think.
I forgot about that possibility. Listen, sign me the fuck up. Sign me the fuck up for Pat Bev, man. As much grief as I've given him at times and stuff. And here's the thing, you know, you may say, okay, well, he fits the, we don't want to bring that big of a personality and that's too much, to, you know, him and Draymond. But don't forget, him and Steph go way back. They were roommates on the AAU circuit. They are boys. They know each other well. You listen to Bob Myers, he said they need another ball handler. That's what they're looking for. It doesn't look like it's going to be McClung, right? Listen, if Utah buys him out, I think there's a strong possibility that we get him. I do. I think that's a real, real possibility. The one thing that I think may stop it is Pat strikes me as the type that won't want to join the champs. You've heard this thing on social media where he's like, all right, well, who wants to make the playoffs? Like, whatever team I join makes the playoffs. And that's kind of like his little tagline right now. So, you know, him being so prideful and being that chip on the shoulder underdog, not sure he wants to join the defending champs. But it makes sense on paper. The relationships are there. And that would be fun, man. That would be fun. I'm on board for that. All right, I'm going to wrap up with two questions left in the comments from the patrons here. So first one is here from Elliot. Hey, Alk. Through these playoffs, I had been thinking about the importance of the first guard off the bench and what the ideal archetype for that player is. I really took notice of it in Game 7 of Memphis, Minnesota, because the winning plays that Tyus Jones and McLaughlin felt so valuable. Those two players set the table offensively while minimizing mistakes on the other end. Then you have the bench scorers like a Dinwiddie or a Poole who put pressure on the opponents individually. Do you have a preference between these two archetype of six men? Or is there another that comes to mind? Are we going to add maybe like the GP2 type, the defensive stopper, the Bruce Brown GP2, the little big guy who can defend all these positions and then kind of play in weird spots offensively? Maybe that's a new type of six-man archetype that's evolving here in the league. I think it's roster dependent. If McLaughlin and Jones are guys where if you have enough offense, that's who you want, right? If you have a thirsty Dylan Brooks and Jaren Jackson Jr. and I'm trying to think here, Zaire Williams, you have other guys that want shots and can score the ball, then you want that table setter, right? But let's say your second unit is more comprised of defensive guys and guys that really can't create a shot, we'll go to Dallas, right? And you've got a Kleba and a Finney Smith that need shots created for them and aren't offensive guys. Now a Dinwiddie fits better or a Jordan Poole fits better. So I think it's roster dependent. Last one here from Kevin. Alk, this one is more of a personal question for the pod. What is your wife and daughter's attitude towards your current status as a podcaster content creator? Do they have any idea how much of a devoted following you have now? To us, you're a national treasure. Appreciate that, Kevin. I don't know, man. Teenage girls, they're kind of in their own world, right? And it's just they everything revolves around them. I think that they see that financially we're doing okay, right? But I don't know if they, it's all relative. Am I, the King of the Fourth Quarters kid followed me on Twitter the other day. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool, right? I'm not sure. I think they're all tired of me. What they'll do is they'll be soundboards to me sometimes when I'm watching a game or I have a take that I'm working on and I'll just say it to them and they at least pretend to listen and let me get it off and figure out how I want to adjust the take. But they respect it. They respect it and they give me my quiet time to record and they understand that I'm working hard and I'm proud that it's just an example of hey man, I put my mind to something, follow my dreams and I'm kind of doing it. So, I'm proud of it, man. And I'm grateful for the support, but nah, they don't know how dope I am. They don't know how dope my sports takes are to answer the question. All right. How long did this run? Let's wrap this one up again. We'll have more opportunities. Maybe I'll open up the mailbag to Twitter and some more public YouTube stuff to get some more questions, but I'm always going to give the patrons first crack at it with the voice messages in these questions. I appreciate all of them. And I'll be back with another one shortly. And also a quick take on Jamichael Green. Look for that in the next 24 hours as well. This is High Volume Shooter. I'm out, y'all.